This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to this Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 116. It's the 14th of December, Thursday, we're recording this. So I'm going to have to be pretty fast to get this out for you guys on Saturday. Henry and I have been running around like headless chickens, the both of us. So we're a bit frazzled. And unfortunately, our other co-host is completely frazzled and will not be able to join us tonight. So apologies and our best wishes up to Alex de Groot on getting some time and relaxation to himself and with the family over the Christmas period. But here we are. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conkers 3, and I'm here with my co-host, Henry Viola, here at HT Viola on Twitter, X for some people. We'll always call it Twitter, I think, me, myself and Henry. Henry, how's it going, fella? Me and you again. What have you got to say about the markets and life in general, very quickly, succinctly, over the past 2 weeks since we met?
I've had an absolute...
Other than your clean shaven, of course.
I am clean shaven.
Yeah.
I've had a fantastic day today. I opened up my portfolio at lunchtime and I thought, oh, what's going on? Has the whole country been bought by the US all of a sudden? My portfolio has shot through the roof. Absolutely fantastic. I think the US print has come in slightly lower than expected on inflation. And as a result of that, the US Fed is now talking about rate cuts. The UK Bank of England has decided to hold theirs. And so last month, nobody wanted shares. Now everybody wants them. So they're loading up the wheelbarrows. Happy days as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. And you're spot on. I've got the notes here in front of me. US stocks jumped Wednesday, the Dow Jones posting a record close for the first time in almost 2 years. I'm not sure where our record close will be the next time we get one, but it won't be, this year, maybe next year if we're lucky, if things go right. After the Fed Reserve kept rates steady and mapped out a fresh path to rates being reduced in 2024. Some people are rejoicing in calling him JP now. Jerome Powell, the chairman, basically said rates are likely to have peaked in this cycle at his press conference. And off the Dow Jones went, rocketed 512 points, and the Dow closed up 1.4% at 37,090, the first record close since January 2022. S&P ended up 63 points. Higher at 1.37 at 4,707. And NASDAQ composite was up 1.38% at 14,733. And just a caveat that before he spoke and earlier in the morning, US time, the NASDAQ was negative. So we went from negative to finishing up 1.38%. It's absolutely staggering. So there we are with the markets. And essentially what we've got is a situation where everyone's now talking about rates peaking. And we had our meeting with regards to the UK government, Bank of England, saying that they're keeping rates on hold. And our markets had a little bit of a follow through after the US markets last night. We actually popped, Henry, today. We actually hit 7,724 on the FTSE 100. That was the intraday high. And we gave up some of that, but we still managed to finish up 100 points on the FTSE 100. We finished up 1.33% at 7,648. I kept saying, well, let's get above that 7,500 mark and we can start to breathe easy. Everyone's been upping the ante and trying to coax out the Santa rally. And some people would say, actually, it's actually started now, yesterday, today, this week, etc. So let's see. We've got to stay above now, that 7,500 to the end of the year and creep higher and higher if we possibly can. FTSE All Share was up 1.57% today, up 64 points. And it was at 7,176. So that's a good 176 points above that support level of 4,000, which we've been wanting. And the FTSE AIM also had a really good day today, up 1.71%, closing up at 736. So up there above the 700 barrier. Some point or other, we'd love to see it back above 800, but I'm not sure we'll do that. As long as it's above 700, it's a good day in AIM, I suppose. So yeah, everyone's happy today. I suspect all those people when the markets drop, that come out at the weekends and give their monthly updates that are usually flat or down 1%, will be telling us that this weekend that they're up 4%, 5%, and 10% for the week and for the month, and be all rejoicing and telling us that they're up now, up year to date, having been down 30% in September. So good luck to them all. Right, Henry, where do you want to start, mate?
Well, I think one of the things that has been rattling around my head is that the market is still extremely volatile. It feels as though, you know, one week we are the flavour of the month, and the next week nobody wants anything to do with us. And so rallies like today make me very, very wary, because it's really easy to look at the market today and feel really confident. I feel more buoyant about things. And yet the persistent trend this year has been for a downward slide. It's been very, very difficult. And so I am being very, very cautious about what I'm buying. I'm really, really having a hard look at my portfolio, and some positions are not going to survive, I think, next year. I'm not generally one for chopping and changing my portfolio regularly, but at the end of the year, I tend to do a little bit of housekeeping. And
culling.
Yeah,
next culling. Year, it's called culling.
Culling, exactly. Exactly. And there are going to be positions that leave the portfolio, you know. In particular, I've got concerns about businesses with debt. You know, if they've got debt that they need to renew, fine, interest rates might be on the way down next year, but they're still at 5%. So goodness knows what corporates are going to have to pay, 6, 7, 8%. And so if you are undertaking some activity on your portfolio over Christmas, maybe just have a look at what you've got and what the debt maturity profile looks like. Take a bit of time to go through the annual reports and map out when debt is maturing, when it's going to have to be repaid, and try and estimate what rates you think the businesses is going to have to, you know, renew at, and maybe take a decision that anything over, say, 6%, 7% is going to go. If it makes up more than a third of their debt stack, you know, that's not a business you want to hold next year when all of a sudden they announce that their debt repayment costs have just tripled or whatever.
Yeah, or additional to what you've just said, Henry, is the fact that they actually are running out of cash and would have come to the market to raise money. Yeah. In these sort of macro conditions, you know, they go to speak to other people, everybody finds out about it, the share price already drifts down to the price that they'd like to place it at, and then it's 10% below that if you're lucky, you know. So all told, you've already seen the price drifting 15, 20, 25%, and then the fundraising comes and you're going, oh my gosh, you know, exactly. And you're smashed across the nose. So yeah, you're spot on. We've been talking about debt for a little while. And I think it's important for people to do that when they're taking some time off over Christmas and looking at the portfolio and assessing where things went right, where things went wrong, and the things that they bought into, which they may not have done enough research on, whether or not they should be keeping it. You know, I don't understand how people can get conviction in the stocks that they've never researched, but some people do. So, you know, it's important to take some time out when you have the chance, when the markets are closed, for periods of time, like over the festive break, to assess what's in your portfolio. You know, once you've had enough time to drink, chill and relax with your family, you know, don't just say, you know, away with the family, I need to check out my portfolio. You know what I mean? You've got do that after everything else has been done. Right, okie doke. I want to start this call, really, on the first topic I want to raise. And I'm sure there are some people that have been sitting around waiting for repayment and redress and so on and so forth regarding this. But there was a meeting yesterday and it was basically cleared. And this is going back, it's now, I believe, more than 4 years since Neil Woodford's equity income fund was suspended. Yesterday, more than 90% of those that were allowed to, investors, voted and approved a redress scheme that will begin paying out from early next year. So a provisional 93.7% approval. The scheme of arrangement proposed by Link Fund Solutions has been approved by a significant majority yesterday. So it would look like, you know, those investors that have been sitting around waiting for most of their monies to be repaid to them will be getting payments next year. Second hearing to be arranged in January. And it would appear that if approved, the scheme is expected to be effective from the 9th of February 2024. The first payment is expected to range between 183.5 million and 200 million and expected to be made by the 31st of March. So if there are people out there sitting waiting for their monies, I'm not sure what pennies in the pound that is, or what percentage that will be of the monies that you had locked up in that fund for all that time. But hopefully, along with institutions, you'll be getting some monies towards the end of March, which is just in time to just whack it straight into your 2024 ISA. How convenient is that? Someone's thought that through, I think, Henry. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Yes, I am. Okie dokie. All right. Where do you want to go, mate? Your first stock idea.
Well,
home or away? I forget what game it was. Home or away? Was it sports? A sports program? I forget what it's called.
Home and gosh, that's going back a bit, isn't it?
Yeah. go on.
Take your pick. Would you like UK or US, Peter?
I've got a US one, so I'd like you to go UK first, Henry.
UK, and would you like to go large or small, Peter?
I'm a Jamaican, mate. We always go large.
Excellent. Right. In which
there's
case,
a reference there. Let's move on. Go on.
Behave yourself. Right. This is a £38 billion consumer goods company operating across three divisions, including hygiene, health, and nutrition. Can't guess. It's Reckitt Benckiser. Ticker is
Reckitt. Yes.
Now, Reckitt produce a huge suite of brands. They're one of these big consumer goods businesses. Yeah. Amongst others, they produce Strepsils, great if you've got a sore throat, Dettol, great for killing viruses, and Harpic, great for killing unmentionable things in unmentionable places.
Now, don't trigger me, mate, please.
The business has actually fallen off a cliff just a little bit in terms of share price. As a company, it's doing fairly well, and we'll come on to the figures in a moment. But the share price is at 52-week lows, which to me looks like it could potentially be one of these really nice, high-quality businesses available at a bit of a bargain price. Now, the reason I like the company is that there's this ongoing trend for urbanisation. We've got more and more people all around the world moving from rural areas into big cities, and cities becoming more and more crowded. Now, this is creating a number of pinch points for society, including things like water stress, which is where it's very, very difficult to get enough water, and not just water, but clean water into an area for individuals. And that leads to compromised hygiene standards. You can't wash your pots, you can't wash yourself, you can't wash your habitat. And that leads to higher infection rates. More disease, things like this. And so I think there is going to be an ever-increasing demand for products that help to protect us against disease, improve hygiene and health, and also improve access to high-quality nutrition, because there's, in addition to this sort of growing trend of urbanisation, we've also got an issue with low quality nutrition in food. I read a statistic that reckoned that, I think it was carrots. Carrots today, you've got to eat 6 carrots to get the same amount of vitamin C compared to just 1 carrot that our grandparents would have eaten. Wow. I don't know. I can't remember who it was that did the study, but that's all to do with soil degradation and the fact that we are now growing food more intensively and faster. And so it's actually not got as many nutrients in it as it used to. We're also eating more hyper-processed foods, which have got lower nutrients. And so RKT is one of these businesses that helps address these challenges. Now, the business, it's huge. I mean, it's, like I say, doing revenues of about 15 billion. It's on target for 15 billion in revenue this year, up from 14.4 billion last year. That's up from just 11 billion in 2017. So although it's one of these big elephants, it is plodding along at a reasonable pace. Having said that, their earnings per share actually seem to be on the slide. So in 2017, they were at 338 pence, just 311 pence last year, which points to me to there being problems with cost pressures. They've had problems with supply chains, they had problems with COVID, now they've got inflation hitting them, and I suspect that's causing problems across their portfolio. Having said that, it's entirely possible that they managed to reverse that over time. So it's worth having a look at the business and seeing what the business is forecasting for 2024 and 2025. They have managed to nearly double their return on equity since 2017. So although cost pressures are creeping up, their return on equity is improving, up from 9% in 2017 to just under 18% this year. And they're also bringing debt down. Net debt of 10 billion in 2017, down to just 7.6 billion at their last update. So really interesting business. I'd recommend people go and have a look at that one. See what you think. Write in and let me know. Be interested to hear your thoughts.
Brilliant. I like that one, Henry. My only thing with Reckitt and similarly with Unilever has been the conversation about other people going to non-premium brands, because they all went down this premiumization route and they've always had that mature lead on people going into their, you know, retail outlet of choice and getting the branded product. A lot of people have been coming down from there now because of the cost of living crisis. So is that why revenues have been drifting off a little bit and why the price has been drifting a little bit, do you think?
Revenue is up. Revenue is up, earnings per share is down. Right. So I do agree with you that de-premiumization trend is a serious risk. Why bother spending £2.50 on a pot of Strepsils when you
can get the profitability has possibly gone down then because of the cost of their materials and staffing and getting it,
you've got
to getting the stuff out to the global, you know, the global spaces and to outlets, do you think? Okie dokie. All right. Yeah. Okie dokie. All right. So I'm going to talk about a brand here. And I suspect there's at least every female listener out there and every male listener out there knows somebody who's bought this product, right? It's a behemoth company. And in most 1 in 10 sort of retail outlets in the UK, there's probably a shop that sells this stuff, okay? And it usually goes on the wrist or around the neck, and it's a jewelry company, luxury jewelry company. Do you know any of them, Henry?
I know a few, yeah.
You know a few?
Verity's been a beneficiary.
I'm sure Verity knows a few as well. Yes. And just hear me out now, right? With this one here now. I'll give you the description of the company. You just shout the name out when you get it, okay? Blank is a premium jewellery brand and a market leader in the charm bracelet category. The company was established in the 1980s in Denmark. Are you shouting?
Is it Swarovski?
Nope, I'm carrying on. Was established in the 1980s in Denmark and has since then expanded globally. Blank has over 2,500 concept stores globally. 1,600 of those are owned and operated, and the remainder are run by its franchise partners. And as well as multi-branded location and stores in stores, Blank owned retail accounts for 51% of sales, own online channels for 21%, and wholesale for the remainder. Charms and bracelets account for almost 3/4 of its sales.
It's not Pandora, is it?
It is Pandora.
It's Pandora.
You've got to be quicker than that, because I know that Verity's got some of that stuff in her jewelry box.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Right, let me finish now. Account for three-fourths of its sales. The firm produces mostly internally in two jewellery crafting facilities in Thailand. Pandora has great pricing power, as evidenced by its high margins, gross margins, and that profitability should persist thanks to its high share of gifting. Why am I talking about it? Because of gifting. Because we've had Thanksgiving in the US, and we're now heading to the festivities here in the UK for Christmas, for those that celebrate Christmas, and it's going to be huge. And across Europe, they're going to be selling tons of charm bracelets and other jewelry items. They've got a total revenue for 2022. Last revenue count, I think, came out in November, around the 8th, 5.57 billion krona. Just up slightly, 2.36%. This is a company that's margins are absolutely staggering on this particular company. And for me, I think what's interesting is that no one looks at this share because it's overseas, right? You can actually buy it in the UK, and the shares are up. Listen to this, Henry. 83 billion market cap company. The share price is up 85% year to date. Oh, sorry, 12 months. 85%. Just gone like that. And everyone's talking about luxury's gone out of business. People haven't got the money to buy. The shares are up 85%. I've not heard a single UK fintwit mention Pandora ever.
No, no. I mean, forget buying the bracelet. Someone ought to buy me the shares.
Buy the shares and give them the certificate, mate. Exactly. And leave it there for the next 10, 15 years. But I was having a conversation with Algie Hall. Love to you, Algie, wherever you are, mate. Having a conversation with him only yesterday. And I said to him, Algie, I swear to you, mate, I am going to be going through all of that research that you've done and all the Citywire team have done and Phil has done and all the rest of them. And I'm going to be buying US stocks that are in elite companies, and I'm going to be buying European stocks. If it's good enough for all these fund managers, I'm buying it. Yeah, because we're sitting here buying UK small caps and mid caps and large caps, and they're not doing anything for us, really, in a sense of outperforming anybody else. There are other companies that are outperforming them elsewhere. And I spoke to the fund manager at Polar Capital for Investing Matters podcast. That'll probably go out in the new year. And I said to him, this is, I won't say which stock it was. This stock's worth 58 billion. You know, it's a mega cap in the US and da-da-da-da-da-da. And he said, oh, well, you know, essentially, that's not really a mega cap, is it? I was like, oh, gosh, yes, so it is. If it was 58 billion US, it'll be 50 billion pounds sterling here, wouldn't it? Yeah. Ish, or there or thereabouts, give or take. And it would probably be in our top 10 stocks.
Yeah.
In the FTSE.
In the US, that's a behemoth. Nothing. Compare that to Apple.
Yeah. It'd probably be in top five, right? Yeah. So you've got a situation where that 58 billion is essentially the top of the AIM index equivalent to what's happening in the US. You've got one stock that's worth 3 trillion. You've got another couple of stocks that's worth 2 trillion. You've got another couple of stocks, well, several stocks worth 1 trillion. And then below that, you've got a plethora of stocks that are worth more than, 500
billions.
500 billion. Yeah. Plethora of them. And then below that, what's our largest one? AstraZeneca, BP Shell, their tops, 100 billion. Way down the ranking, global stocks rank way down.
Yep.
So this is a large cap in our eyes, anyway, in Europe. Price to earnings ratio of 18. Price to book is quite steep, luxury brand. Price to book 21, which is very rich indeed. Price to sales 3.3, price to sales. Earnings growth has been flat, but steady. It's just the margins. Whatever they put out, the margins are stacked. They look good. They're very expensive. You know, I took the boss to a jeweler's, the jewelers where the football players take their missuses to, when we had a very significant anniversary. Is it a year and a bit ago? 2 years ago now. And I went in there, and you know when you go in, you're going like that, going, yeah, have a look over there, darling. You know what I mean? Have a look, don't look at that tray.
Yeah, how much is the pot plant?
Absolutely. Where's the sales aisle? There's no sales aisles in there, right? And she came out with this bit of jewellery, mate, and she it was that expensive, Henry. She's scared of wearing it.
Oh, gosh.
You know, she's scared of wearing it. I'm like, oh, my giddy. Oh, she doesn't shop like that ever. I said, look, it's a big one. And I just didn't tell her about it. I just took her to the shop. I spoke to the guy who owns it, who I know, and he said, oh, Pete, it's all right. I'll look after her. So I just sat there having my coffee, and she got pandered to for an hour and a half. And then she came out, and she was like, we need to hide this bag. We need to put it away. And she brought it out. She's worn it twice. She's worn the set of jewellery twice so far. She refuses to wear it because she's scared. But the Pandora stuff is expensive, but it's you can get little bits. And what people do is they buy the charms individually, don't they? Buy one at a time and fill the bracelets up or put one on, as a pendant on a piece of jewellery. So, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's my overseas stock.
Listed that's a really, really interesting business. I mean, LVMH, Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy, or whatever it is, owned by Arnaud Bernot, is it? I forget how you pronounce it.
I don't know the full owner, sorry.
Anyway, has basically a business that's gone around buying up luxury brands. You know, Moët, we've all heard of Moët.
Oh, yeah.
Hennessy, the brandy business. You know, these brands have done terrifically well. If you look at the share price of LVMH over the last 10 years, it's absolutely skyrocketed. You know, there is a huge amount of money in luxury goods. And the margins are astronomical because... Yes, okay, you're using premium materials, but after a certain point, a handbag is a handbag is a handbag. You know, the amount of silver in a Pandora charm, you may be looking at 50 quid's worth of silver if you're lucky. They're selling it for £400.
The brand name. You know? It's attached to the brand name, mate.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. when you and Verity come across from, you know, when you go and visit Nottingham, you come across to Leicester, I will force you to come down the road where Lumbers Jewelers is, which is owned by Dominic, and just go in there and you'll be there on your knees praying that Verity comes out.
I was going to say, Peter, I thought you were my friend. Isn't it supposed to be the season of goodwill? I'm getting stitched up here.
Listen. When Verity hears this, she'll be coming to Leicester on her own, mate. Saying, Peter, where's the
exactly.
shop?
Exactly.
I've got Henry's card with me. Right. Before we move on to the next stop, mate, I'm going to quickly give some shout outs here. Regarding the Memphis charity fundraise, we're still raising money for the disabled young kids, ladies and gents, and we are sitting at 2,925 plus gift aid. We're just shy of 3,500. We've got 2 weeks or so. We're going to run this till the end of the month to get as much donations as we possibly can. We'd love to get the overall figure to 4K. So if we get enough of you, I think we've got about 60 people, excluding myself, Henry and Wheelie before him, that have donated. That's 60 of our over 3,000 listeners that have donated this time round. So please just go onto the Just Giving page, which is www.justgiving.com/fundraising/TwinPeetsChallenge23 and make a donation of a fiver, a tenner, what you can. Let's get that figure up to 4K if we possibly can. I've got to give a shout out to @TraderMark72. Mark N, who made a donation just less than 24 hours ago, and his comments were really enjoying the podcast and catching up on the back catalogue. Insightful and humorous, great effort by you all, and happy to donate to this great cause. And Mark, who is a new follower, and I think he's a new listener because he mentioned that on Twitter as well. So Mark, thank you for coming on board and listening to us. Appreciate the fact you've straight away made a donation. That's very, very kind of you. And Mark donated £50 and £12.50 gift aid. So thank you ever so much. Top man, as Henry said. I'm not sure of the full name of this individual, but again, made a donation. PID, made a donation 4 days ago. Really enjoy the podcast and thanks for all your hard work to Henry, myself and Alex. And donated £5 and £1.25 gift aid. And Andy Flying Finance. Andy, hello there, mate. And hope you're flying safely It was great to meet up with Andy a couple of weeks ago and a few others in Cambridge. And Andy's made a donation of £50 plus £12.50 gift aid. What's he saying here? Many thanks for all that you continue to do, Pete, Alex and Henry. A very small token of my thanks and appreciation. Wishing you and all your listeners a wonderful Christmas and a prosperous 2024. Thank you, Andy at Flying Finance. Brilliant. Right, so ladies and gents, I'll give you that again. Shows how desperate I am. I'm giving it out twice now. www.justgiving.com/fundraising/TwinPeaksChallenge23. Please, please, please make a donation and let's hit that 4,000 figure for all those young, disabled young people and their families. We can do something nice for them in 2024. Anything you want to add to that, Henry?
Only to say that I once attended a talk about charity where the room was asked, there must have been 500 people in the room, and we were all asked how much we thought we should donate as a percentage of our income. And he started out at 50%. Stick your hand up if you think you should give half your income. No one stuck their hand up. 49%, no one sticks their hand up. 35%, few hands go up. 30%, few more went up. Carried on all the way down. Most people stuck their hand up at the 10 to 20% mark. And he stood there and he said, so you think that you should give 20% of your income to charity, do you? Right, now let's try another one. How much do you give to charity? People sat there looking at each other and they didn't know. Did you know in the UK, the average figure for charitable giving is less than 5% of people's income? There you go. Peter stuck up a single finger. It is one of those things that I'm going to sound a little philosophical here, but I genuinely believe is good for the soul. To do something for other people, you get nothing back yourself. It is just to help others in need. And for a lot of families this year, at this time of year, it's tough going. You know, it's tough all year round for kids with disabilities. And Christmas is a time when we should give to others. So if you can, a few pounds to the charity, it makes a world of difference to a bunch of children who have a very, very difficult time of it. So thank you very much to everyone that's donated. And to those of you that are considering it, please go ahead and, you know, throw a few pounds in the proverbial bucket. We are very, very grateful for it.
Brilliant words, mate. Very well said. And I completely agree with you. Some people will say, and I appreciate that, some people haven't got the money to give. And that's absolutely fine. And what I ask them to do in my own communities that haven't got the money is if they've got the time, is to give up their time, donate their time, volunteer in the community and do something and support some of the other projects that don't really get a lot of support. There's loads of projects in and around where you are, and there's loads of people putting on events that will require additional support to get those events to actually be a success. So just have a look in and around where you live, if you're listening to this podcast, and have a look at the voluntary organisations that are doing stuff, and they'll be glad to get another pair of hands to help them with whatever they're putting on this year. So yeah, do what you can and be charitable, as they say. Right, Henry, where do you want to go with your next start? You're going overseas, aren't you? I know you are.
So I am going overseas. I'm itching.
Go on.
Right.
I'm just crossing my fingers in the hope that, and I've got everything crossed, that I know this stock that Henry's going to shout out, so I'm not embarrassed again. Go on.
I'm ready. If you don't know this one, I'm going to be very surprised. Uh-oh. It's a $38 billion market cap cybersecurity business with over 20 years of growth. It's been profitable and cash flow positive every year since it IPO'd in 2009. It's got $5.2 billion in revenue and 27% operating margins. If you can't guess, it's a company called Fortinet.
I know that one. Yes.
Excellent. He's smiling, people.
I'm smiling.
So, cybersecurity is one of those spaces that you know, it's becoming massively more complex. Infrastructure around the world is becoming more interconnected and more vulnerable to attack. More damage is being done when attacks are successful. And businesses are spending more and more to try to secure their IT estates. There are an estimated 42 billion Internet of Things devices connected to the internet, which is absolutely astounding. This is things like smart fridges, smart watches, laptops, phones, etc. 42 billion. That's 42 billion individual points of entry that an attacker could, you know, use at any one time. 84% of companies as well are now going to what's called a hybrid working model, which for those of you that aren't aware, this is where staff are working from all over the place. They're no longer going to a single office using the company's infrastructure. They're now working at home and on the train and from, you know, a friend's bedroom and abroad, you know, and in a hotel coffee room. The risk of that is that, again, you've got lots of different devices connected to corporate networks and lots of different points of attack. You can secure your office Wi-Fi, but how secure do you think the hotel Wi-Fi is? Do you even know? Does anyone even check? Who knows until it's too late? There are now hundreds of distributed application suites used by mega corporations. So one of the most common is the Microsoft Office suite, Word, Excel, PowerPoint. But there are hundreds of web services suite, for example, is used to support applications. You've got time processing and data information.
Carry on.
Corporate security services, 21 days to actually find the breach, 12 hours to contain it, 6 hours to investigate it, and another 12 hours to remediate it. And more than 50% of organizations are therefore reporting that security is becoming harder to maintain, citing a larger attack surface and a greater volume of incoming attacks. So to me, Fortinet is one of these businesses that is at the forefront of trying to combat this cyber security crisis. They are buying back shares at a rate of 2% a year. The share count's fallen from 890 million shares in 2017 to just 795 today, which means that if you bought in 2017, you've now got a bigger share of the pie. They've compounded their revenue at a rate of 24% since 2017. And they've compounded their earnings per share at an absolutely eye-watering 58% from 10 cents in 2017 to $1.45 last year. So this is a super high-quality tech business. Now, doesn't pay a dividend, so if you're after your income, this perhaps isn't one for you. But in terms of growth and quality, this looks very attractive to me. So again, be interested in listeners' thoughts. Please do write in.
This, we had this conversation in the last podcast, Henry, you know, and we do get caught up on it paying a dividend. You know, if that's compounding at 15% a year, you know, the average dividend paying stock in the UK is at 4 or 5%, right? You need 3 years of that dividend compounded to get ahead of, you know, of Fortinet, right? And then Fortinet's going up over those 3 years anyway, 50%, 70%, 80%. So yeah, you can have the security of having a dull, you know, not less volatile sort of stock, or you can hold Fortinet for 3 years and get a return compounding it overall 33% a year or 36 and double your money every 2 years. It's just, you know, sometimes you've got to do the math and think, you know what, I don't want the risk, so I'm just going to go for these low, you know, low volatility, low beta sort of stocks and just get the dividend and be fine with it. But as I said to you before, sometimes those dividends might be fine, 5%, 6%, 7%, whatever. But if the share price doesn't have to accelerate, doesn't even stay still, if it falls because of any sort of detrimental news, 5% or more than 5%, you're in deficit for it. You're paying to hold a losing stock.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's a consideration, but that is top class numbers there. And yeah, it's one of them that once again we're not looking at it because it's not listed here. And if it was listed here, we'll be going whoop whoop whoop. I've got that stock. I've got that stock. People will be talking about it all the time. But again, I don't see anyone talking about Fortinet when it comes to cybersecurity companies. And knowing full well that is another, you know, AI stock as well. So it's probably had a boost in the last 12 months, has it not, regarding its percentage returns for the shareholders. And being that size, anything out there that's any good in that space, they're going to have the money and the wherewithal to go and buy it. So they are going to get bought. They're going to be the acquirer, I think, going forward at that particular size. Brilliant call, mate. Brilliant, brilliant call. And I'm pleased that I knew it as well. So I'm giving myself a little pat on the chest there.
Little Christmas present for you.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, good call, good call. And you're spot on regarding the number of devices. And the problem is that the other thing I'll throw into that mix and why cybersecurity stocks are important and need to be investigated and buy the best quality ones is because wars are not being fought on the battlefield as much or will be going forward. They'll be fought via technology. And you're going to need massive, massive amounts of tech and cybersecurity walls to prevent infrastructure just being shut down. You know, just turn off that airport for us over there. One button, doosh, gone. Can't fly any aircraft out. Oh, just stop the rail link there. Bosh. Rail link shut down.
They don't need a cyber attack for that. We're managing that on our own.
Oh, ouch. Ouch. Henry Viola Hair. Come on, mate. It's meant to be Christmas.
Sorry, if there's any rail drivers in the audience, please continue listening. I love you very much.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. I think there's a chap called at Real Ale Fans. That's a train driver, mate. Just be careful.
Oh, I love Real Ale Fans.
He doesn't know, like you anymore, Henry.
Yeah, I was
he does
not
say, like
I'll be,
you anymore.
Be turning up and picketing my house. Please don't.
Listen, he's got your picture, mate. At what's
on
it?
On the dartboard.
St. Pancras or whatever, which one you usually turn up at Euston. He'd be looking out for you. Right, another little break here. I want to talk about two takeovers. I've been saying this for nearly 9 months to a year now. That more takeovers are coming. But they still surprise me. I'm going, how comes I didn't look at that one? Or look at that premium there. What's going on? And it's just staggering, some of the prices that's being offered here. Our good friend, Alex the Greek, was on here the other day on one of the podcasts. He was saying, you know, the average premium is going to be about 30%. Not anymore, mate. They're now 35, 40, 60, and so on and so forth. We've got another one here, another two here I'm going to quickly mention. And Henry's going to share with us the winner of the Twin Peaks challenge for November. But firstly, I want to talk about these two stocks here. One's called Smart Space Software.
Oh, I saw
and
this
that is considering
one.
Say again?
I saw this.
Saw this one, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think lots of people saw it but and wish they had it. It's considering an 82 pence per share offer from Australia's Skedder Holdings. And is consulting with advisors and major shareholders. Smart Space Software, as it sounds, is a provider of space management software. Basically, it rejected previous bids at a lower price. And basically, Skedder broke cover and said, "Listen, we've offered this to the company." The next day, the company came out and said, "Actually, we are considering it." But under London's put up or shut up rules, Skedder must make a firm offer by 5 p.m. So put this in your diary, folks, by 5 p.m. on the 9th of January regarding its current bid, which is at 82 pence. This is on the 13th, okay? So today's Thursday. Yesterday was the 13th. On Monday at close of play, Smart Space shares were 34 pence, and the bid came in at 82 pence. Hence, folks, I keep saying this, and Henry keeps saying it, and Alex keeps saying it. Have a look at what you've got in your portfolio, and some of those stocks that have got really good bits of kit in niche sort of areas, are not indebted up to the yin yang. They you might get a rescue bid. you might get saved. You might get a get out of jail free card, because from 84 pence, 34 pence, sorry, to get an 82 pence bid, if you've recently bought that,
134% premium, I think it was.
I know. Absolutely staggering.
134%. I mean, why on earth, if I could go back with a crystal ball, sell everything and just put my portfolio in that for the year, happy days.
No, this is not a podcast called Back to the Future, Henry. You know,
yeah, exactly.
You've not got a time, you're not having a time machine. I know you've got a little grey swirl on in your hair, but you're not going to go back with it like the doctor did, mate. No way. Right. Another one. And everyone's saying that the recruitment sector is dead. No one's going to be able to get anybody any jobs. You know, everyone's being laid off and blah, 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 blah. Here we are. In Poon. Ticker symbol IPEL. You see this one, Henry? No?
This one's new.
Well, this one has agreed at £483.2 million bid from Head First Global BV. According to talks, they've been at it since July. So this is a Luton-based recruiter. The deal is worth £5.572 per share in cash and £3.928 provisionally in loan notes. So again, an absolutely staggering premium to where it was before. And the IPL shares bounced to basically the price is going from £1.84 bid from where it was before of, I think it was £5 odd or something or other, but it wasn't 100%. I think it was nearer to £7, sorry. So, and again, another nice juicy premium regarding this particular one again. So that's two bids. If you had any of those out there, Folk Smart, Space Software, or in Pelham, well done. And have a look at Robert Walters or STEM that came out with some news today. It wasn't that great, but the share prices are moving up. Didn't crash, which I thought it might do. STEM today, S3, I think S3 is the name. STEM is the ticker because it's mainly technologists that they send out and recruit to agencies. So those would be two of those companies in that space recruitment that I would be looking at. And a third would probably be Hayes. So have a look. If someone's actually in that space regarding recruitment ahead of there not being a recession or a soft landing and people being back in work next year, investigate those three. There may be another takeover in the next 18 months in that space. Henry, right. You've done the numbers. You've crunched the numbers. You've done your Carol Vorderman on us, and you've got the numbers and done all the maths, mate.
I'm considerably less good-looking than Carol Vorderman, I'm sorry to say.
Well, I think, you know what, Henry? I think Carol will probably agree with you, but let's carry on. So, but Verity would disagree. Let's just get that in there as well. Competition winner for November. We are getting very close, folks, to the end of the competition. And Henry's going to whittle through the top three. And then we're going to get this individual to get in touch with us. And then we'll be announcing the winner in January. Go for it, sir.
Right. Well, in a first for the year, I am delighted to announce that our November winner.
No. Pause. You've got to do the third one.
You want me to go up from the third? All right. In which
absolutely,
case.
Absolutely, mate. Build up the tension. Come on. You can't just
We are tense now. Then. Okay, Mr. Willie, you're going to have to wait a moment. Right.
Someone just broke the car.
Yeah, exactly. In third place, no car crashes, please. In third place, we have our friend Donald Pond, who...
Donald Pond?
...had a 22% return for the month with Anglo-Asian Mining, Burford Capital, Phoenix Copper, Trident Resources, I don't know the ticket for this one, EML.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPETES. The incredible and exclusive offer means that, monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
EML. I think it's Emerson.
EML. Let me have it. It is Emerson. Yeah. Yes, 22% return. So congratulations, Donald.
Donald. There you go.
We have Steve Coxon 1 with a 33% return for the month.
Wowza, that's massive.
Angus Energy, Empire Metals, Ben's Creek, and Bidstack.
Brilliant.
And our winner for November with a 46.68% return for the month is none other. Steady yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Steady yourselves. 47% return. None other than Get Some 4 yet again. Second month running.
Wow. Well, get some. Wowza.
Absolutely.
2 months in the trot. That's the first time we've had that done. First time. Well done.
After the portfolio was largely carried by IMC Exploration Group, which after going up 117% in October, went up another 226% in November.
Amazing.
So I don't know if anybody in the audience or indeed Get Some For actually owns IMC Exploration Group, but if you do, consider throwing a few pounds into the charity bucket with your winnings, because you've had a very good 2 months there with it.
Very good two months.
Congratulations. Please do get in touch with us again, and we will we'll arrange for the prizes to be shipped.
Absolutely. That is a staggering move in 2 months, mate. 300%. Absolutely staggering. And that's what happens sometimes when you've got some of those tiddlers, you know. Equally, if you've got the wrong tiddler, it'll go down 80% in 2 months. So, yeah, absolutely amazing. Thank you for sorting those numbers out, Henry. I really, really appreciate your support with it all. And thank you for all of those that have already entered the competition for 2024. Get some, please get in touch with us, or I'll have to fire an email over to you. You've got the opportunity now to confirm 2 books, and you're going to end up with 2 months, I think, from ShareScope to have free access to the award-winning data. They are our sponsors, so Henry and I can qualify that. They are top-notch. I think they've had about 20-odd awards in the last 20-odd years. So they're the best of the best. So that's what we know of them. Anyway, so, ladies and gents, we've got the rules here for competition 2024, and I will be hopefully confirming the prizes that we have for that particular competition and challenge in January 2024 for you. And the rules are very, very simple. Henry and I and Alex will be putting out a tweet for the podcast, this podcast, and possibly another one if we do another one before the new year. You have until midnight on December the 31st to reply to a tweet or post, if you want to call it that, from Henry, myself, or Alex. And within that tweet, you've got to have hashtag Twin Peaks Challenge. You can select 5 entities, ETFs if you want, but they have to be UK listed, right? Essentially, we're looking for you to select 5 FTSE or AIM stocks only, nothing else. Nothing else. We're trying to get people to have a look at what's in their portfolio that they think could do well, and also have a look at what's going on in the UK market. Not Aquis, only FTSE and AIM. Select 5, write out the full name, so Henry and I are not racing around trying to find out what the ticker is. Yeah. Full name plus ticker. Hashtag EML if it's Emerson. Hashtag AZN if it's AstraZeneca. Hashtag BUR if it's Burford. Full name, and then hashtag it, please. And reply to Henry or myself with 5 stocks, etc. And just add Twin Peaks challenge on there. We'll then enter it into the competition and we'll get the ball rolling. And from the first day of trading in January, we'll then run. And then the month for January's winner will get a prize. The month for February will get a prize. And then we'll run it all the way through monthly winners. And then we'll get an overall winner this time. Next year, we'll be talking about potentially who the winners are for the whole competition. And that's where we are with it all. So please enter. Please get it in before the deadline. We had a few people that missed it last year. Don't wait till the last minute because you'll probably be getting ready for New Year's Eve parties. So get it in before then, because I know I will. Right, Enric, well done with that. I'm going to jump in here now, if I may, because I think you've got one more stock after this, haven't you? Yeah?
I've got one more.
And I'm going to share this one here. And it's another company, which I'm going to just talk about first. We've talked about it before on this podcast. I'm not sure you were co-hosting at that stage. And I'm just going to give you the name because I don't think you're going to know it anyway. But I'll start with the name. This company, ticker symbol is Fran. Franchise Brands, Henry. Yeah, you heard that about? There? No, he's sitting there confused. Would this be a company that Henry doesn't know, I wonder? Franchise Brands is a holding company engaged in franchising and related activities. Its brands associated with the company are Metro Rod. I'm sure you've heard of that one. Chips Away, Henry. Oven Clean. Metro Plum.
Oven Clean.
Right, there you go. Willow Pumps and Filter. It bought Filter about two years ago. We have spoken about it before, but it's back on my radar, and that's why I'm mentioning it. So I think this is a very, very interesting company. Currently sitting in a price range of £1.30 to £2.50. Price is £1.65. Market cap of 256 million. So in the largest respects, it's a tiddler, really. PE is quite high. Yield is tiny. But its return on capital invested is just sub 9.46 here. Operating margin of 10, which I think is quite reasonable, really. So this company, what caught my eye was back in October, basically said it remains on track to meet full year earnings forecast as its B2B businesses are trading at record levels. I love it when somebody says they're trading at record levels after third quarter was a tad softer than the first. So the recent quarter is now pushing back and they're catching up. So there was a possibility that they could surprise when they come up with their next data. They come up with the next data in, say, February, yeah, or early January, and they surprise the market. I think this could start re-rating, potentially. I'm not going to say too much more on it because I'm conscious of how long we've been on the podcast and that Henry's got one more. But they're involved in lots of different things. And the beauty of it is that it's a franchise model. So the people that are running the franchise for them are fighting their best to try and make revenue for themselves. You know, it's not got to Christmas where we're all going, can't wait for Friday to go to the Christmas party. These franchisees are going out there trying to make money for themselves. So they're generating revenue for the larger umbrella company. So that's what I'm looking at right now. So yeah, plumbing, always need a plumber. Can't get a good plumber for love nor money. Nobody wants to clean their ovens. I've got to clean the oven in my house. So have a think about it. Research idea. I do not own it. Could it be one of them that I buy in the future? Very quite possibly. But right now, as with all stocks that I tend to put out here as a research idea, I do not own them. We'll go back. I'm just quick mention to Experian. Alex mentioned a couple of podcasts back. It was at, I think it was at £26 or £27 at the time. And he said, oh, Hail Marys, blah, 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 blah. The share price tonight closed at £32 per share. So another quality stock, and it's up almost, I don't know, 15, maybe nearly 20% from where Alex mentioned it. So another really great investment idea that was shared via this podcast. Right, Henry, go for it, mate. You have got one more. Oh, by the way, what do you think of that Franchise Brands? And did you know it? Did you know it?
I didn't know it. Never heard of it. I don't even remember you mentioned it.
Happy days.
So,
happy days.
Yeah, I look at the fact it's a franchise business. You're right. You know, the franchisees will work super hard because it's their business, and the franchise owner, in this case, Fran, is a beneficiary of that. So really nice model, really nice model.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, Fran is the ticker. So have a look at Fran. Yeah.
So I've got a very small, when I say very small, a small UK-based manufacturer, distributor and recycler of building products. I suspect you're going to know this one, and I suspect a lot of our listeners are. They're primarily engaged in the supply of PVC windows. If you can't guess, they're called Eurosound.
What was I going to say? Evolution, sorry.
Ah,
go on. Ticket Eurocell.
Eurocell. Ticket is ECELL. ECELL. Now, the business of supplying PVC windows isn't an enormously sexy one. You know, unlike cybersecurity or whatever, you know, the product doesn't really change that much, no matter what they say on the packet. It's a window. They've been around, UPVC windows have been around for decades. But Eurocell has got a huge range of UPVC products. They do windows, conservatories, and associated supplies, so decking, flooring, fencing, huge product range. And one of the things that caught my eye was the sustainability angles. So they recycle and reuse the UPVC from their windows, and their products are consistently higher in recycled UPVC than most other manufacturers. They've got a closed loop recycling process through one of their divisions called Eurocell Recycle. And they are really doubling down on this idea of, you know, not throwing these things in skips and landfill. You take the materials, you break the window down, you melt the plastic down, you recycle the aluminium, etc., etc., and you reuse it, which I love because, frankly, I think 20 years ago, most UPVC windows probably went straight in a skip. And there's probably landfills somewhere full of old windows that really could probably be recycled. They've got a huge national network across the UK. You've probably never noticed, but there's probably a branch near to you. Each installer is an independent business, meaning fewer overheads and more flexibility with their prices. And a little bit like franchise brands, the main mothership, if you like, provides training support and product coaching to make sure that each individual installer knows exactly what they're doing, how to recommend the best products, and how to fit them correctly. They are solidly profitable, have great cash generation. They're available on a very reasonable P of 9.7 times. They've had earnings per share growth of about 7% since 2017. Nice chunky dividend of 6.5%, which is covered 1.2 times. They've got a progressive dividend as well, so they aim to keep growing it. And directors in the business have been buying consistently all year. Mostly thousands of pounds worth of buys, but there are a reasonable smattering of chunky 100,000 plus purchases, showing some serious confidence by the directors, in my opinion. So not one to bet the shop on, but it did catch my eye. I like the fact the directors are buying. I like the recycling element. It looks like quite a high quality business. So perhaps one to tuck away in the portfolio. Again, if you've got any insights on it, any thoughts, please do write in and let me know. Love to hear about them.
There's an element there that I didn't know, Henry, and you mentioned the fact that they recycle most of their, or as much as they possibly can, regarding that. And that gives it an ESG angle, you know, which puts it on another side of what some people will look at as a sustainable product or a more sustainable product, and enable them to be in different categories to ordinary stocks. Yeah, so that's what attracted me to Renewi, which got a bid, and then the bid didn't happen. But I think as a stock, and we all know, oh, PVC windows, PVC doors, blah, blah, blah. It's not a sexy industry. The margins tend to be quite low. But if they're recycling some of that, that will then possibly increase their margins. So I like that. And it's one I'm going to be having a look at. Did I know about the stock? Yes. Have I looked at it and researched it before? No. And I'm not sure why. Because I had done, I would have known about them recycling elements of their stuff there. But yeah, the closed loop side of it, I really like that. And that to me, I did just say it's not a sexy thing, but that for me makes it sexy.
Excellent.
Anyway, no, because it makes it more interesting, because
it does.
The cost of getting all these raw materials to put these windows together and that, blah, 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 it's expensive.
It's and it also means that they've got a more resilient supply chain. You're not waiting on stuff coming
Absolutely.
Over from China. You're taking it out of someone else's window, recycling it in the UK, and then installing it in the UK. So you're
Absolutely.
Much more resilient. As
Absolutely.
Opposed to, oh, sorry, our container ship's got stuck in the Suez Canal again. We've got a 6-month
Absolute.
Wait.
Absolutely.
And we've already taken out your window, so sorry about that.
Drafty winter for you.
Exactly.
Oh, dear. Love that line. But yeah, nice one. Nice one there. So yeah, I'll be having a look at that over the Pimbo, mate. So definitely. So looking at that, what's the price here? Yeah. On the main market as well. Didn't know that. Market cap, 143 million on the London Stock Exchange, as we say. It's quite small, but maybe small because it's been unloved or it's off the radar for most people. Excellent. Three good picks there, Henry. Very well done.
Thank you very much.
Right, folks, we're nearly there. All I've got to tell you about before we go, the Investing Matters podcast, which I've just done, with somebody that Henry is absolutely like, is that the guy? I went, yes, it's the guy. The finance history guy, otherwise known as Jamie Catherwood. Phenomenal guy. I think he's only 28 and he's already
absolute
working at this
massive, legend.
Massive firm, doing all the research on bubbles and manias, writing all sort of stuff on articles on there, and working with the likes of Jim Chanos, Barry Ritzold, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, James O'Shaughnessy, you name it. He's worked with everybody. He's on Bloomberg. And I interviewed him a couple of weeks back. The podcast has gone live yesterday. And you can find it on the Investing Matters channels. Have a quick look on Spotify and just type in Investing Matters. And the latest one is with Jamie. He's a Spurs fan, of all things. He's half Brit, half American. Went to King's College in London. Super smart guy, really down to earth. And the only thing I don't like about him, he looks like a very, very young guy. And he is 28. He's nearly half my age. And he's probably twice as smart.
He is an absolute brain. And he's a wonderful writer. If you've not checked
he's
out
a wonderful
his blog,
writer.
It's Investor Amnesia. Please
Investor Amnesia
go and
is the
have
blog.
A look.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I've read his work for years. I'm super jealous you got to speak to him. So.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, we had so much to cover, I'm like for prepping for interviews. I've usually got about 25 questions. With him, I had 42.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's going to cover that. So I won't get it. I was like, ticket it. And we got through 20 of my questions. So I was ever so cheeky. I said, "Oh, Jamie," I said, "we're not even finished. I've got loads more questions for you. Maybe we can get a part two, maybe." It was like, yeah, absolutely, we'll do that. Just let me know. We'll do it in the new year. I was like, oh.
Legend.
So we go again, mate. We go again. So we're doing a part two with Jamie, but get it on Investing Matters. Get on Spotify and have a look at that, folks. We've got a bit of time over Crimbo to have a look. And let me know separately what you think about it. But more than most things, I want you to know about this podcast that you, Henry and I have delivered for you. Twin Peaks 116. It may or may not bring a close to the year, depending on how much mince pies Henry and I eat and drink between now and the 27th. If we are up for it, we'll do one on the 27th. If we're not, we'll be slumbering. So I'm not making any promises right now because I don't like to make promises I can't keep. It may or may not be. Regardless, by the time we come back, it will be Christmas. So Henry and I want to wish you, ladies and gents, a very merry, merry, merry Christmas. Hoping that you're going to be able to travel and see friends, family, chill out, relax, recharge, and basically have some quality time to do whatever you want to do with whom you want to do it with. And if you drink, enjoy to a level. If you eat and you've got any spare mince pies, send them my way. because I'm stacking up as we are right now. Henry, I try to ignore Henry's comments and another person's comment about mince pies because I have not stocked up fully yet. I haven't even found my favourite mince pie.
I did hear the BBC put out a stock warning. Apparently, Peter in Leicestershire has bought so many mince pies that there is now a shortage. They've had to call out the local police force to guard mince pies, ladies and gentlemen.
No, not this year. I've not stopped. This is what I'm saying. I'm not stocked up enough yet, and I'm conscious that other people are. I've not been to Sainsbury's yet. I've not been to Marks and Spencer's yet to check them out. I've got to get one packet each from these shops, and then go, and then I stock up on the one that I've chosen. So I'll be putting out a picture before the Christmas is over of the chosen numero uno mince pies of the years, ladies and gents.
This is an excellent competition.
Well, you bring it, mate. You bring it. You've got to have a bit of alcohol in your mince pie. You know, or a certain topping. You know, it can't just be a plain old mince pie, just pastry. It's got to be quality, mate. Right, ladies, we're rambling. Ladies and gents, we're rambling about mince pies. I do apologise. I hope you enjoy this podcast. Lots of love. Enjoy your crimbo. We'll catch up with you soon. Big love to Alex, the group. Big love to Wheelie Dealer. Massive love and affection to our co-host here, Henry Viola Hare. Always smashing it. Henry, have a fantastic Christmas. Lots of love to all of the Viola family and the Viola Hare family.
Thank you very much, Peter. Likewise, it's been a pleasure.
All right, folks. Enjoy, and we will catch you in podcast 117. We look forward to your feedback. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.